I want to say good morning to you. You're listening to Heart of Mind Radio, and this is PRN.FM. I'm Catherine Davis, the host of this program, and I welcome you to join me today. And I wanted to remind you, those who want to can listen on the phone. That number is, well, there are two numbers actually, 401-347-0456. And the other number for listening on the phone is 712-432-7231. That's 712-432-7231. And again, I'm Catherine Davis, and today's program, we're going to have an interesting mix of information to share with you. Later on, we'll be speaking with Donna Novick, and she is an emergency room triage nurse turned whistleblower. And she was involved in a lawsuit with St. Luke's Roosevelt Hospital, and it was concerning the neglect of a homeless person who later was found dead outside the hospital. So it was a very serious case, and she has gone through a lot personally because of her deciding to speak up about this issue. But in our first segment, I'm going to share with you a meditation that I created, oh, a little over a year ago. And it's about connecting to the child within. And it was actually written and created for women who are actually carrying a baby within their physical body. But I started doing it myself, and I began to realize that it really is very much the same when we begin to make that deep connection to our own inner child. And if you think you don't have an inner child, maybe you're a bit disconnected from that part of yourself. But every part of ourself is still alive and functioning within our world, within our body, and most importantly, within our emotions. And when that inner child is either cut off or has been wounded in early childhood, it can continue to create problems within your life. And many of the undefined fears that you have, or issues of repetitive behaviors and being involved in relationships that are toxic, all of these things come together and occur because of unprocessed issues with the inner child. So we're going to go to first to this meditation, and I want you to take a moment and listen to it. You can take a few breaths as you're listening and go deep into this, and we'll be back in a few moments, it's about 8 minutes, with a few comments, follow up on the meditation, and then we'll be introducing our guest. So stay tuned and listen to this, connecting to the child within. Connecting with child. Breath is life. Connect with your breath by bringing your awareness to it. Close your eyes and feel your breath. Feel your breath flowing into your body and out again. Feel how your lungs move with your breath. Feel the gentle rhythm of your breath. Feel your own inner movement in response to your breath. Feel the dance, a dance of life. Breath and movement, movement and breath, breath and movement. Your body moves to the rhythm of your breath. Your breath moves to the rhythm of your heart. Follow your breath deep into your chest. Follow your breath to the inner heart. Dive dive in deep on the wave of your breath to the center of your loving heart. Feel the loving heart steady in its beat, constant in its rhythm. Pump, 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 pump. Feel the love of your heart as it radiates and flows into every part of your body. Put your hands over your heart and return the love. Make love to your heart, loving your heart loving you. Feel the love of your heart expanding to fill every corner of your body, of your being. Feel the love of your heart flowing, loving, caring, and nurturing. Open and accept self-love. Open and accept self-caring. Open and accept self-nurturing. Move one of your hands from your chest to your womb. With the expansiveness of love, feel the life within you. Gently expand your love into your womb of life. Feel the small presence within you. Be aware of its little heart beating, innocent heart, loving heart. Surround your beautiful child with the love of your heart. Be attentive to your child's presence within you. Feel your child's energy. Feel your child's essence. Feel your child's love radiating into your being, into your heart. Feel your love radiating into your child's being, into your child's heart. Breathe and rest together for a time.
Okay, give me a voice over it. It's just the ocean. And you were just listening to a meditation that is designed to bring you close to that inner child, that part of you that was in the fetus of your mother, that grew in the womb of your mother, that was birthed into the world and became the person that you are today. But the things that occurred to us when we were in that state of complete innocence, when we didn't have the comprehension and couldn't negotiate our needs and our feelings, it left us with certain kinds of wounds or scars or misunderstandings. And we begin to operate in a world in such a way that caters to those misunderstandings. And as we become adults, we entirely forget or have no real memory if it goes back too far. And we wonder what's happening in our lives, that we find ourselves in chaos, or we find ourselves in painful relationships, or just deeply unhappy with ourselves and with our expression in the world. And very often, the way to start, the place to start, is with making that connection to that innocent part of our being that lives within the center of our own heart, and open up a pathway for that connection. And that really is the purpose of this meditation. And it's also very much connected to the work of energy healing. So I want you to think about that. Think about that part of yourself that is gentle, innocent, and capable of being free and completely creative. And when we connect to that inner child, we can empower ourselves as adults. And very often when you see someone in the world who's acting like a fool, or you might think is acting like a fool, they're probably very cut off. So maybe we can have a little bit of compassion for those people who don't understand how important it is to connect to themselves so that we can connect to each other. And I really want to say again, hello. You're listening to Heart of Mind Radio over PRN.FM. I'm Catherine Davis. And this program is about consciousness, spirituality, health, and making that connection for healing ourselves and healing each other. On today's program, my guest is Donna Novick, and she is an emergency room nurse, a triage nurse, who's became a whistleblower about the hospital she was working at the time. And she complained because a homeless man was turned away from their doors and not treated, and ultimately ended up dying, passing away right outside the hospital. And so this is something that we need to look at. One, to come to an understanding that how could something like this happen? And two, why would the person who brings attention to it have to suffer from that? And so there are a lot of questions about what happened and what we need to do to change this situation that we're living in. And also joining us in studio today is Paula Gloria Barton, and she is one of my colleagues from Woodstock FM 104. So I want to say hello to both of you. Welcome, Donna. Thank you.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. I'm very happy to have you here today. And I want to say hello to Paula Gloria. Thank you.
It's wonderful to be here with you, Kathy, and put attention on these spiritual topics.
Yeah, it's really important. It's fundamental to the politics, I believe. It really is. Because if you don't have that sense of humanity within you, you could have the correct politics, but then if you go out and act inhumanely, how does it make you different?
I don't think it is the correct politics. Woodstock FM 104 was able to break this story, which for most people it's so harrowing, but the culmination is so profound and so spiritual. So I'm just going to step back and let Donna unfold her story.
Yes, thank you, Donna. I'm really glad that you were able to come today. And I was really happy to hear from you, because this is the kind of inspiration that people need in their lives every day. So please tell us what happened.
The story is, I'll tell you the story, but the story is symbolic of many people. It's a story of one man, but he is a symbol of thousands that could be you, it could be someone you know. I was a triage nurse at Roosevelt Emergency Room in Midtown Manhattan, and a beautiful soul, his name was Daniel Iverson. He was homeless, he was elderly, he was an amputee, a wheelchair bound, and he came to the emergency room one night very depressed. He had swallowed a massive and toxic lethal dose of morphine. 700 milligrams is what he claimed that he had taken. There was another homeless person that had witnessed him ingesting the pills, and he was in a very psychologically distressed state. He was saying that he wants to put a bullet through his brain. His time has come. He wants to go to sleep and never wake up. He made lots of references to dying and not wanting to live. His vital signs were completely off the scale. And when I say that, I mean they were very indicative of morphine overdose or some narcotic overdose, mm-hmm. at least. And he was definitely what I considered an emergent patient, and I don't think anyone would dispute that today. He needed immediate medical attention. I took him to the resuscitation room, and I'll just kind of jump forward, mm-hmm. but essentially he was denied any treatment by any of the staff, doctors or nurses, and this was the entire resuscitation team, plus there was an attending present, there was a charge nurse present. Nobody wanted to treat him. Nobody wanted to even administer oxygen to him, which in itself could have saved his life or at least given him more time. He needed a dose of Narcan, which is an antidote for morphine and all narcotics. There was at least a bare minimum of treatment that he should have had, a psychiatry assessment and so on. But instead, this is what I really would like to address, what you said about empowerment. The staff in the hospital, they are not self-empowered. They follow a system, and it's a system of apathy. It's a system of following each other. If one does, then they all do, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. When I pushed for him to be treated by the staff, nobody wanted to treat him. And once one person says that and a second person says that, everyone just walks away. He was eventually found in the street outside the hospital, dead in his wheelchair. Medical examiner confirmed that his death was of massive toxic levels of morphine and alcohol and other substances. And what I really, I guess, what I really wanted to address is not so much my story or his or Daniel Iverson's story, but just the very nature of the way homeless people like Daniel Iverson are treated. He is a symbol of many, many thousands of people in this society. He's also a mirror to us of that which we fear in ourselves. You know, many people don't even look or make eye contact with homeless people. Many people are afraid of them because they see what they fear. So they walk in, you know, you often observe people on the street walking and they just don't even acknowledge a homeless person sitting there. And I believe it's a bit of a herd mentality. I believe that because we are so detached, we don't find our own self, connect to our own higher self, to our own discernment and decision. Like you said, we make our own choices. But in a corporation like the hospital, there is a system that begins very early on. From when nursing students and med students come through the door, there are so many guidelines and policies and right this, and that there's a hierarchy as well. And it's a system of fear tactics all the way. From the minute you sign the papers, all they implement are fear tactics that they often can be subtle. And so people have a sense of autonomy. People have a sense of I love my job, but they don't really see that they are in a system, and the system is a revolving door of corruption, as I call it. And that I would like to bring an awareness to this. I think that it's time that these systems be like dissected, and they should have a new there should be a new method of instead of indoctrinating fear, indoctrinate compassion, indoctrinate care, indoctrinate.
People would only need to follow their oath.
At a minimum, yes.
Yes, at a minimum. But I agree with you, and I appreciate what you're saying. But also, I think it's important to show people that sometimes it does take courage to step out of that system. And that's something that you were willing to do. And ultimately, you were vindicated. So I would like for you to at least tell that part of the story.
Yeah.
Because it's important for people to understand that they have a right to speak up, you know, because that's the fear that they're going to be, their careers are going to be ruined. And that's what has been going on with you. But at the same time, your courage is also, you know, give such inspiration. And if more people in hospitals would copy that and, you know, try to match that, then there wouldn't be anything to fear because everyone would be standing together, but in a positive way. So tell us something about what happened with your court case.
From the minute this incident occurred, first of all, I'll try not to make it about me. I'll try and generalize as much as I can, but I will give you examples of it's a systematic onslaught of retaliation that goes on. From the minute you are a whistleblower, you are the enemy. And that's there's no lighter way to put it. It started immediately. From the minute I reported it to the director of the hospital, there was an immediate onslaught of bullying, slander, gossip, being marginalized. I was no longer allowed to be the triage nurse. I was no longer allowed to mentor new grads. I was pushed to this one. We work in teams. I was pushed to like a team where it's in the back corner of the hospital. I was there day after day after day. Like they never rotated me. And those aren't even the bad things. There were threats that were being made to me directly, things such as, you're going down, Dana, we're going to take you down, don't walk home alone, and more. There was a lot. The problem was that the management would do nothing about it. They were very complacent. All my complaints fell on deaf ears. And then what they have is they have like a system of tactics to essentially push any whistleblower out of the system. The nurses' union had warned me well in advance that this was going to happen. I was at least prepared for it. But it came in all forms, from having manager hovering around the desk saying, "Is that your water bottle?" And I would say, "No." And she'd point at another one and say, "What about that? Is that your water bottle?" And I would look at it, I'd say no. And then she would come around the desk and she would start to pick up all the thermoses, water bottles. None of them were actually even mine. But she picked them all up and threw them in the trash can just next to me. And that kind of bullying from my manager. There was also much bigger things, like being denied vacation, having my benefit time redacted, not being approved for a medical leave of absence that I'd applied for due to insomnia. Then not being paid was a big one. I didn't get paid my salary. The union filed a grievance. The hospital was given 3 days to pay me. They refused, and then I was threatened by the hospital. I wrote them an email after 7 days of not getting paid, saying, if I'm not going to be paid, I won't be coming to work tomorrow. They responded to me from the legal department, no less, with an email saying that that an intentional work stoppage is a cause for immediate discipline and possible termination. They referred to my not being paid and saying that I won't work if I'm not paid as an intentional work stoppage. And then they started to threaten me with discipline for that. Then they would threaten me. They would constantly send me emails with threats that they would discipline me for this, that, and the other. I am from Australia. I'm on a work visa. They did not. They tampered a lot with my visa documents, which created immense problems at the embassy, the consulate in Australia, the U.S. consulate. And anyway, but I'm one example. I'm sure that every whistleblower that steps out of I don't know what you call it,
out of line, I guess. Yeah.
Yes. They find a way to bully and push you out of the system to the point that it you can't work there, you can't function there.
That was really it was a bad experience, and I understand and I can really relate to that kind of situation of being because the bullying is also subtle, but it's the accumulated effect of your coworkers, your supervisors, the legal department, everyone. Yeah. If everyone does one thing only, that's still a massive amount of harassment, and when it's repeated over and over again, that's, it could really break down your health, it can break down your well-being, it can break down your state of mind, and ultimately you either lose the job or you just can't perform it any longer. But so you were separated from the organization, but then you went back and made a lawsuit, and it seems to me that your position was supported. So can you speak to that?
Well, there was actually an employment arbitration. The union filed grievances. There was what they call a grievance hearing, where the judge and jury are the hospital human resources. It's often referred to as a kangaroo hearing or a mock hearing because it's completely biased. And, of course, from there it went to a full arbitration at the American Arbitration Association. That took 1 year and 8 months in total, and it was me against Roosevelt Hospital. They had brought in 14 witnesses, and there was just me on the other side of the bench. They had managers, critical care directors, security guards, even one of my very good friends even testified against me, and. Yet, no one was aware of the hospital management have a way of, using fear tactics to get your own friends and own co-workers to come and testify against you. In the end, I won immediate reinstatement, 12 months back pay, seniority, and full benefits, and. The arbitrator, and just after the arbitration, five people, it was the manager of the emergency room nurses, the chief of critical care, the nurse chief, the nurse head of critical care, the chief of nursing, a woman in human resources who was kind of like the head of human resources. Mm-hmm. These people were all terminated immediately after my arbitration. But then when I was reinstated, more retaliation, which goes on till this day, which is part of the reason that I'm here, just to tell people, don't be afraid, if you're a nurse, it doesn't even matter what job you have, the truth is always going to stand up strong. The universe will support you. You have to stand for the truth, and to choose a side of not speaking the truth is like to choose the side of the oppressor,
Very much so. Well, we're going to take a break right now for some station announcements, and then we'll come back and we'll go deeper into the real reason that you're here, and that's to inspire people to bring courage into their own lives and to have, you know, to speak up and to be willing to support and to make changes. So stay tuned. We'll be back in just a moment. And I want to welcome you back and wish you good morning yet again. I'm Catherine Davis. You're listening to Heart of Mind Radio, and this is PRN.FM on the internet. Those who are listening by phone, the number is 401-347-0456 or alternately 712-432-7231. And we have been speaking with Donna Novick, who has been telling us about her harrowing experience with St. Luke's Roosevelt Hospital after she complained about their neglect of a homeless person who came in for help. Now, I did see some newspaper articles. You told me that I could find some, and in fact, I did find a number of them. And there was this one story that talks about that the Department of Health and Human Services says, backs you up, that the hospital violated anti-dumping rules. And that the hospital routinely ignored needs of indigent patients.
That's correct.
After the homeless man Daniel Iverson was actually found dead. So it's been shown that they're actually committing really criminal acts when you think about it. And if you look at the seriousness of the consequences, one might think that they are killing people instead of saving people's lives just based on their policies and behaviors. So yeah. There's a lot of support for what you did. So your being willing to speak up has really made people aware that this is a real serious problem. And this is just one hospital.
This is just one hospital, and this is the result of just one investigation, mm-hmm. and only because of the one complaint that I brought forward. So I can only imagine what things have never been openly brought to the attention of the Department of Health. Mm-hmm. And they make every effort to cover up. In this instance, they made lots of attempts to cover up, including the most obvious is that all those staff members till this day are still employed there. All those that were on the resuscitation team, even the director, the nurse, the charge nurse, every single one of those staff members are employed there till this day. No one was written up, no one was reprimanded, and the reason is that it would create a paper trail. They did not want anything. If someone was written up for this, then it could be traced. Mm-hmm. So better to get rid of the whistleblower than to start writing up a group of doctors and nurses. The Department of Health findings, which I have a copy of at home, also makes reference to document falsification. And also the district attorney's office, where I've been multiple times, the assistant DA for now 3 years has been telling me there'll be an indictment, there'll be a grand jury, but I don't see that that's ever going to happen.
Mm-hmm. Well, it doesn't look like it's going to happen, but it may be what needs to happen really is more consistent with your vision of people being willing to stand up for what's right and not being willing to turn people away because they might seem homeless or dirty or crazy or whatever the situation is.
Yeah.
A hospital should be bringing those very people with those very symptoms into the doors, into the hospital to be treated. So
yeah.
Let's speak to the hospital workers. What do you want to say to them? Those people who can make these decisions.
I think it's a very tough one because it's a system that they are taught from a very young, from the minute they graduate, they are pulled into a system. But it's important at some point in life to find the self, to know the self, to trust in the truth and to speak the truth, to just be complicit in a system that is corrupt and not be the one. I don't know what to say.
It's kind of something that is indicative of a change that's taken place, especially in New York City, over the last 30 years at least, where hospitals are privatized and corporatized, where the service to communities has shut down. Many of the hospitals that are actually in communities with poor people their doors have closed. And you see this in systems, not just in the hospital, but in the police department.
Absolutely.
A police department that used to serve the people are now murdering people on the streets.
I know.
And so, you know, we have a system
which
The people who participate in it, they may have gone into it with the idea of doing good in the world, have been so compromised by these systems that they have become functionally weapons of war against people in need. And it's a real massive problem. And I don't think that just doing demonstrations in the street is going to be enough. People within these systems have to be the ones to change it. And so that's why, the systems have to change, and we have to roll back this corporatization, this profit-making in everything that we do that makes it impossible to recognize each other's humanity.
I think it starts, though, when we don't view ourselves as a corporation, because, again, the culmination of her story is a revelation of the power within and the ability to love in spite of it, including... I mean, how did you view all of your oppressors, like if your best friend spoke against you when you had your spiritual awakening? How did you deal with something like that? That wasn't a corporation. That was your good friend.
At the time, I was just hurt. I didn't say anything.
Of course.
Never confronted her. I was just completely shocked. Now I have full forgiveness for her because I see that it... In the mindset of many of the staff at the hospital, it's too scary and too risky to stand up against management, to take the side of the whistleblower, and it's fear. It's a fear-based behavior. It's not. I believe we are all intrinsically and inherently pure and good, but these systems and tactics, their psychological indoctrination that they employ in corporations especially, that make everyone follow a certain guideline. They even have books that they call the Code of Conduct.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they hold you to these very rigid and very narrow windows of behaviors, and everyone is afraid to veer from that. I forgive now. But I still hope that I believe that we should raise consciousness in society, and it's upon each individual. It's upon each of us to find our higher self, to find a connection to the truth, to trust in life, to trust in the truth, the universe, in God if you believe, in the universe if you choose to call it. And I believe that spiritually it's the greatest deed that we can do in life. To be afraid is never to be in line with the light.
Mm-hmm. This is so true. And I think that people don't, you know, when they think about spirituality, they tend to push it off to the side as something that's inconsequential.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really fundamental to being a honest, sustainable human being. You know, otherwise we're not sovereign. We're not owning ourselves.
Exactly.
You know, without that spiritual strength, we're just slaves to some other system.
Exactly.
Or some other form of control. So spirituality is fundamental to our sovereignty as human beings. And so I think that this is very important for people to understand, and that there's a certain responsibility that comes with that. And part of it is doing what you've done. And you've paid a price for it, but I see, you know, I'm sitting here looking into your eyes and I see the radiance of your spirit shining through.
Thank you.
And I see the strength of your being. And I realize that maybe all of this happened for a reason, so that you can be the one, that beacon that can shine out to people and say, we all need to be doing this. It's the only way the world will change. We can't expect the guys at the top to change it. They're not going to.
Exactly.
We have to do it. And yes. So that's, you know, you've shown us tremendous courage. And you're still standing here strong and in your pure spirit, despite all that. So that's wonderful.
Thank you so much. I'm trying the best I can. But this is, I hope that I can send a message out to anyone and everyone who's listening and who will share this story. It's to take something that seems like a tragedy and turn it around and make something beautiful out of it. Next time, show compassion for the other. Forgive, show compassion, show love. Love thy neighbor as thyself. It's upon us as humans. Who are we as a species if we walk around and segregate ourselves in classes, in races, in religions, in whatever?
Yeah.
I'm passionate about this, and I'm sorry, I'm not a good radio speaker yet.
No, actually, you're doing wonderfully, and I think that you're correct, because it is the ability to look at someone and recognize their humanity, to understand that they were a child in somebody's womb that came into this world like the rest of us with hopes and dreams and desires.
And feel their struggling soul, too, in the case of the forgiveness for her colleague who spoke against her.
Yeah.
She could still, over time, I guess, you could see that there was an emerging soul. Because I think at the end of the day, it's a conquest of the soul power over corporate policy that speaks to weaker natures, but not judging them. Mm-hmm. If she continued to judge her friends or feel betrayed by her friends, I feel you wouldn't get to that place where Joe and I didn't have the benefit of seeing the radiance in her eyes. Mm-hmm. We met her on the telephone.
Yeah.
And actually, I met her right after I found my show was canceled on MNN, after thousands and thousands of shows and so many years. You know, when Alan first introduced her, remember I was in that tizzy? It was after 12 noon. Mm-hmm. And I said, I have to speak to Alan first. But within the hour, we called you back. And just hearing her story so uplifted me and Joe. And then we lined it up for that evening. And the Woodstock Valley was blessed with this knowledge from 10 o'clock. I think we went until 1 in the morning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so what you describe is that radiance. You see her in front of you, and you know that this is a success story in terms of the preciousness of our life, that we don't come here for the sake of accommodating corporate policies, because we're, even when we have to work, we're more than employees.
Exactly, exactly. And in your way, you have brought some good out of the unfortunate death of Daniel Iverson by bringing this story forward. He doesn't, you know, end up being a completely invisible person. And what he went through will hopefully prevent other people from having the same, suffering the same tragedy. People should be able to go to a hospital and get help. We should be able to turn to each other and get help. And I really like what you said about just acknowledging that people, that these are human beings. And whatever the misfortune they may have had, it could happen to any of us. We're so close. So close. It doesn't take much.
And it's not even homelessness, because if it's an economic incentive, you could have heirs waiting to knock you off because you're rich. I remember Greg Sutton at MNN picked that up on my work when I was with my mother in California, who also died of morphine, and she had no pain. You know, so this truly is important for people to understand. This is far bigger than just a homeless person that people think, well, I'll do everything I can not to be homeless. I'll get a ton of health insurance. My mother had all the health insurance you could imagine. This can happen to anyone.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. It's true. Exactly. That is true. That is true, very, very true. And very often, the way the system, the hospital system works, it's designed for providing that which is going to bring the most income. I grew up with a mother who had multiple sclerosis. So it was all about, you know, providing all these treatments that didn't help her but was income producing for the hospital.
Yes.
And this was before people knew that there were things that you could do. You know, it was a while ago. So this isn't a new story for the hospital system, but it's just gotten so much worse. So, and the stories are permeating all the systems under which we're controlled.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's true. Well, we're close to the end of the program, but I do want to give a number in case there's someone there who wants to call in. You have a thought or a comment or a question. Our call-in number is 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888 if you have a thought about this conversation. Paula Gloria, you wanted to talk about something. You were thinking of putting together
Well, she didn't like the word whistleblower, and I thought that was really interesting.
That's not true.
Well,
when it was first put to me years ago,
right.
The first time I heard it, I didn't like it.
Yeah.
I didn't understand it.
Well, I think that's very deep reaction because I was saying this: the game of it's not a game in life. You know, we're making an ascent. So I was wanting to put something together with Alan Steinfeld where people can actually come out and connect and see you and ask questions and so on and maybe get other people who are just verging on this or maybe who have their own story. So I was saying at the transcendental whistleblower, how to transcend the whistleblower. In this day and age of Eric Snowden publicity, it is more important than ever to understand the difference between judgment against our brother and judging when to stand up for our society's well-being, and finally when to duck, not run away, but prepare to play another day. Listen to the harrowing story of Donna Novak, an RN, in whose eyes all came before her were the same. Is there?
I think there is a caller.
Yeah, let's go for it.
Is there a caller?
Hello? Okay.
Be
they homeless or well-to-do, she only saw bodies who needed her and her hospital's help. Mm-hmm. Find out firsthand how a loving, caring soul interacted for years with corporate policy and corrupt courts, culminating in an acceptance of love for all. So it's an inspirational, story.
Well, it is important because it is true. When you begin to look at what's happening to the whistleblowers in our society, they are being criminalized, at least on the political level. When you look at Snowden and you look at what's happening, I dropped his name from my brain. He's holed up in a consulate in England, I think it was.
I tried
the WikiLeaks guy.
Yeah. But that's why I think deep spirituality is important. I think the story is a success because of the spiritual unfoldment.
Mm-hmm.
And from that, things unfold that put us in a better place. This story isn't complete yet. We're still...
Yeah, it's still unfolding. So where do you see yourself going from here? I understand that you've had some difficulty now with your work visas. Do you have any difficulty staying in the country, or what is the situation now with your life?
In terms of the work visa, it expired on November 25th, just a week ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I have an immigration attorney that is making every effort to get a U visa for me, which is an informant visa.
Mm-hmm.
It's a special visa for individuals from abroad who have assisted law enforcement with any type of investigation. He's trying to get the New York State Attorney General's office to sign off on that. And at this moment, I still don't know where that will end up.
Mm-hmm.
The hospital is clearly making efforts to... This is one of many of the last games they're playing, but they are making every effort to try and create problems with my work visa, as they did last time. And Yeah, I don't know. At this point, I just want to tell this story. I want to share it, turn it around. It's not about myself. It's about one man who's symbolic of thousands, and to understand that that everyone is a mirror to us. We can learn. We can look into the eyes of every soul, and we can see a reflection of ourselves. And to turn someone away is to turn yourself away. Mm-hmm. To give is to receive. To punish someone is to punish yourself. To whatever action we put on another, we put it on ourselves as well. Mm-hmm. We all create energy. We're all emitting a frequency, an energy, and it should be a high vibration of love. And there is such a thing that I noticed, which I call like the ripple effect, where if you see hundreds of people pouring out of a subway station and there's a homeless man sitting there, I've done this. If you go up and you give them a dollar, 10 other people will follow
you.
I've
noticed that as well.
But if you, yeah, it's incredible. It's mm-hmm. like it's the ripple effect. It's energy. It's like you create a wave. Mm-hmm. And otherwise, and I noticed that before you do that, people will just pretend to look away and walk straight ahead because they're all in their rush, absorbed in their own.
Mm-hmm. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah. It's true. Like even in the subway, if someone is coming through asking for coins,
yeah.
If one person gives, then other people will give. But right. It takes that first person to make that step that somehow gives other people permission
Isn't
to do it.
Isn't that what the shaman does?
Yeah.
He first sees what others aren't seeing?
Yeah. And so I think this is really a call to all of us who consider ourselves to be spiritual beings, light workers, who are interested in transforming the world, is to be that one who's going to take the step, who's going to look a homeless person in the eye and say, I admire you. I see how hard you're struggling, or is going to give them some change, or is going to just speak to them if you don't have change. Yeah. Often I don't.
Yeah, give them.
But just say hello.
Yeah,
and
smile.
So, yeah, and yes. You can make a significant difference in people's lives. And like you said, the energy continues to grow. And your smile might be preventing that person at the end of the day from taking that overdose.
That's
because
true.
They've been reminded of their own humanity.
A smile is the shortest distance between two people.
Yeah, so that's a beautiful thought. We're out of time, just about. I just wanted to remind people, you're listening to Heart of Mind Radio over PRN.FM. I'm Catherine Davis. And you can reach me by email, heartofmindradio@gmail.com. Or by phone, this is my Skype phone, it's 347-480-1694, 347-480-1694. And you can be in touch about this radio program if you want to find out more about my guests, Donna Novick and Paula Gloria Barton. You can send an email, heartofmindradio@gmail.com. Or if you want to find out more about my healing space, you can do that by email or by calling 347-480-1694. And if you'd like to give out a contact information, please do.
I guess my email address is nursedana@hotmail.com. It's just NURSEDA for Apple, NNA.
Oh.
And I am on Facebook. Mm-hmm. Anyone that wishes to send me a friend request or write to me, it's Dana Novak, and it's D-A-N-N-A, Novak.
And Paula Gloria Barton, who broadcasts on Woodstock FM 104, do you have a contact for people?
rabbitholecentral@earthlink.net.
Okay, and I want to thank everyone for joining me today over Heart of Mind Radio, and I thank our engineer and staff here at PRN.FM. Stay tuned. Mm-hmm.